Foy Short, A Life in Southern Africa, Chapter 1. Roots and Childhood. Brother W.N. Short and wife of Harper, Kansas, have decided to go to the mission field. This brief notice in the Word and Work magazine may have seemed less than earth-shattering to readers in 1920, and yet that decision by a newlywed couple would affect thousands of lives. It changed the course of their unborn children's lives. There would be no roaring 20s in America for them, no Babe Ruth, no secure small-town lives, no secure neighborhood schools and friendly policemen. Instead, they would learn to struggle to survive, battling malaria and other tropical diseases with their parents on remote outpost. Though the decision of William Newton, or W.N. Short, and his wife, Nancy Adelia, would mean hardship and occasionally even desperate times for their children, there's no indication that they ever regretted it. They and their children, like Foy, lived full lives of happy, meaningful service to God. But more important than the effect that their decision would make on their children was its effect on thousands of Africans who, through their teaching and that of those who followed in their footsteps, would learn the hope of a loving God. Family background. Foy's father was born in 1894 in Rome, Kansas. His grandfather, Jasper Newton Short, came from Switzerland County, Indiana. There, members of his family, of German extraction, left the Baptist Church in the mid-1800s, motivated by the preaching of John Beverly Vaughter. Young Will was evidently an unwilling witness to much of the wrangling about instrumental music in the early 1900s, and he later explained to Foy and other members of his family that this accounted for the fact that he was often reluctant to engage in any spirited exchange of different points of view with his brethren. Foy's mother, Delia O'Neill, born in Johnstown, Missouri, was of Irish extraction. Her family was distantly related to the Dudley Ross Spears family, who was also from Johnstown. Spears was a respected preacher among non-institutional disciples in the last half of the 20th century and first part of the 21st. Delia liked conversation and even occasional verbal jousting. When thinking of the combination of her reserved grandfather and more outgoing grandmother, Foy's daughter, Ellen Bays, laughed and said, "You can imagine. Here is this Irish woman living with this taciturn man living in the middle of nowhere. The only person she has to talk to is him, and he doesn't want any arguments." It speaks volumes for her. There was a period of 9 months when she wouldn't have seen another person she could talk to. The O'Neill family moved to Cordell, Oklahoma in the early 1900s, so that their children could have a Christian education. J.N. Armstrong became president of Cordell Christian College in 1908 and exerted a great amount of influence on Delia and her husband-to-be, Will. Foy's sister, Sybil Dewhurst, said that Armstrong had a wonderful influence on his students. He taught them to trust in the working of the Spirit of God's grace. Mother and Daddy imbibed that spirit. Cordell Christian College would grow to be the largest school that was acceptable to known members of Churches of Christ before it closed in 1918 because of the pacifist beliefs of many in its faculty and the resulting unpopularity in the surrounding community. Cordell Christian College was a predecessor of Harding University. Will's family moved to Cordell, Oklahoma when he was about 14 years of age for the same reason that Delia's family moved there, so their children could be educated by Christians. There, Will and Delia met, fell in love, and because of Armstrong's influence, began to think of dedicating their lives to preaching overseas. However, their romance was interrupted when Will was drafted into the Army. Will's conscription into the army was a great challenge in his life. He did not feel that a Christian should kill. However, unlike some of his contemporaries at Cordell Christian College, he felt that if his government called, he should answer. So, he entered the army while constantly begging his superiors for a non-combatant role. However, he made the mistake of displaying his excellent shooting skills, and therefore his superiors were disinclined to remove him from combat duty. For a while, he was in a type of limbo as far as his combat status was concerned, and even required to wear a yellow armband so that he could be derided as a coward. However, his superior stubbornly refused to transfer him. He overheard one telling another that when the bullets started flying, Short will shoot the enemy. Meanwhile, he prayed for the strength to do otherwise. He was shipped to France, and the very night he was to be rotated into the combat line, the armistice was declared and the war ended. Will Short felt that his prayers had been answered. While Will was in the army, and after Cordell Christian College closed, Delia and her brother George earned their degrees from Thorpe Springs Christian College. Then when Will returned from the army, he married Delia and the new couple settled in Harper, Kansas. Harold Foy Short was born January 17, 1921, in Harper, Kansas, near the Oklahoma border. Africa's Call. Will and Delia Short originally planned to go to India to preach. However, news about conflicts among Indian preachers made them change their minds. As they were thinking of where to go, they came in contact with F.B. Shepherd, who had been corresponding with John Sheriff in southern Rhodesia. Shepherd told them about the need in southern Africa, and they began to make their plans to go, traveling among churches to seek support. Their primary supporters would be the brethren in Harper, Kansas. Will, Delia, and little Foy left for Africa in late 1921 before receiving all the money they needed. Such sacrifices were almost universal among early evangelists in southern Africa. For example, Will's friend and fellow pioneer, A.B. Alva Rees, never received more than $25 a month during the first years of their stay in Africa. But Rees, who was a capable woodworker, supplemented the family income by raising their food and making furniture and wagons. Over 30 years after arriving in Africa, Will lamented what he perceived to be a lack of sacrificial spirit among young men contemplating work overseas at that time. There was a time, he said, when a man who wanted to become a missionary was either a fool or one who sincerely felt that the Lord had called him to some land. He worked, talked, wrote articles, visited, and worked again until he had some means of going, and he did not rest until he got there, for he felt that was what the Lord wanted him to do. And his wife went with him, even if she had to do without inner spring mattresses and had no electric stove to cook on. But today it seems different. When I was in my homeland, I found a number of young people who were interested in going to some field, provided the brethren send them, but there was no desire to put out any effort. The idea seemed to be, if they want me over there, they can send me and my family with a good salary. And the time must not be over 2 or 3 years. We must not be thrust into the bush somewhere away from electric lights. But the main thing is that we must have the money, for it would not do to come back home a broken old man after a life spent in that land, and we have no place to go and no one to care for me. No, sir, the brethren know I am here and they can supply a plenty if they want me to go. Close quotes. After arriving in South Africa, the Will Short family took the train to Bulawayo, southern Rhodesia, where John Sheriff and his wife met them. Almost as soon as the young family arrived in Bulawayo, they had to begin their battles with a common African threat. Will wrote in his first diary entry from Africa, "Foy has malaria." It is not difficult to imagine Delia's dismay upon seeing her infant child suffering the fevers and chills of the dreaded African disease shortly after their arrival. However, after a doctor's visit, Will reported a few days later, "Foy is better." The short spent 18 months working with John Sheriff on the Forest Vale mission. Sheriff taught young Will Short the basics of working and surviving in Africa. Foy said that Sheriff's lessons and the influence on his father were invaluable. Foy's sister Sybil was born in Bulawayo during this period. Sheriff encouraged Will to take his small family to northern Rhodesia, now Zambia, to help one of his original African converts, Peter Masia. Sheriff and Short made one or two exploratory trips to the region. Finally, government papers were approved for a mission at Sindang, about 20 miles from Livingstone and the Victoria Falls in northern Rhodesia. Starting Sindang Mission. Will Short went alone to Sindang to prepare the way for his family, arriving on March the 20th, 1923. He wrote briefly in his diary, "I hated to leave, and Delia did not want to see me go, but it was necessary." All evangelists who must leave their families can identify with those words. Upon his arrival, he found that Peter Masia and African disciples, converted by him, had already cut poles for the construction of a house and prepared a lovely vegetable garden all ready for use. Will wrote, "I wish Delia and the babies were up here now." After trying to make the place at least barely habitable, he sent word back to Bulawayo for his family to come to Sindang. They, along with Molly Sheriff and two colored, that is, mixed-race girls, raised by the sheriffs named Ella and Rhoda Bent, arrived at Senkobo Siding on July the 4th, 1923. Sybil recalled her parents' story about their arrival. Quote, "I was a few months old when Mother took Foy and me by train from Bulawayo to join Daddy at Sindang Mission. Daddy met us at Senkobo Siding with a borrowed sledge equipped with a basket for hauling grain pulled by yoked oxen. He had lined the basket with quilts and pillows where Foy and I rode in comfort with the baggage while he and Mother walked alongside the sledge. We traveled slowly on higher ground beside the old washed-out roadbed that had eroded into deep ruts where sand was deep enough in places to bury the runners of a sledge. The lead boy suddenly realized that the sledge was too close to the rut and frantically tried to pull the oxen away from the edge while the driver and Daddy struggled in vain to hold the sledge upright. Mother watched in horror as the sledge tipped over slowly on its side, spilling Foy, me, and the luggage onto the sand. No one was hurt, and the sledge was righted and reloaded, and we reached the mission before dark." Close quotes. Sindang Mission wasn't an ideal place for Europeans to live. Eldred Eccles described conditions in the late 1940s. Quote, "The area was unhealthy, especially for whites. It was low-lying and hot, and malaria was rife. The medical officer of the district, Dr. McGregor, wanted the mission closed because of the prevalence of disease, but it stayed open and the mission personnel continued to be taken into the government hospital in Livingstone for treatment." Close quote. Will Short describes some of his difficulties in his first report to Word and Work magazine. Quote, "We are nearly 20 miles from the post office and trading point, and 8 miles from a siding on the railroad. No way yet for us to get about anywhere other than walking, except that I have a bicycle. When we want anything from the town, it is either sent out to the train to the siding and then carried out by natives, or the natives go the 20 miles to town and carry it from there. I hope to have it different, however, before long, if I can manage financially. I did not have the house finished when wife and babies came out, but by degrees am getting it completed. Am trying to keep the expenses down as much as possible by doing the work myself with native help, yet there is quite a bit of expense one way and another in getting up a house, schoolhouse, etc. But these things must go up. Close quotes. Sybil said of the temporary pole house her father built, "We lived in that while Daddy burned brick to make a brick house that took many months." Though weighed down with the need for back-breaking work just to provide food and shelter, Will was elated with the prospects for spreading the gospel around Sinday. Quote, "Two young men were baptized in the name of Christ, Sunday, September the 2nd. May they prove faithful unto the Master who bought them. Others are interested and are being taught more. Over 100 out to meetings on Sundays. This is very encouraging to us compared to the few who are at meetings in Bulawayo. This makes 9 baptisms since I came the 1st of April." Close quotes. Will soon made friends with his African neighbors. When a troublesome lion began to kill livestock in the village, he set up an ambush to kill it. He wrote in his diary on October the 1st, 1923. "Stayed up in the tree last night, but no lion came around. I got some sleep up on the platform, but was awake some, though I was depending on Peter D. to call me if he saw the lion." Childhood. Foy's childhood memories of Sinday Mission and Kabanga Mission are dim, but his sister Sybil has several from stories their parents told from those early years. One thing that stands out in her mind is her mother's efforts to protect her children from mosquito-borne malaria. "Every evening when the sun went down, she gave us our baths, and then she bandaged our arms, legs, and feet to prevent mosquito bites during supper and family devotions. Once in bed under mosquito nets, bandages were removed and rolled up ready for the next evening. People in the States sent old sheets to tear up for bandages." In spite of Delia Short's efforts, malaria affected every member of her family, especially her husband. They all took a daily dose of quinine, the only known medication known to control the effects of the disease at that time. Sybil tells how their parents gave it and other medicines to their own babies and other small children. Quote, "They mashed the pill in a spoon, put a little sugar and water with it, and while one of them held the baby's head and arms firmly, the other held its nose and poured the liquid into its mouth. The baby swallowed it because it had to swallow in order to breathe. Giving them medicine was often a matter of life or death. I saw them give babies medicine like that, and mother said that was how they gave us quinine as babies. As soon as we were old enough, they taught us to put the pill on the back of our tongue and gulp a lot of water to get it down quickly." Close quote. Foy remembered an occasion where his father became gravely ill with malaria at Sinday and was helped by an African evangelist, Kamboli, whom his father loved deeply. Peter Masiya had converted Kamboli. Quote, "One time when my dad had malaria, we had no transport. He needed to get my dad 20 miles to Livingston to a hospital. They couldn't get enough carriers to carry the litter. Kamboli took the turn of two men and carried one end of the litter all 25 miles to Livingston. He wasn't very big, but he must have been very strong. Close quote. Foy gained a useful tool during his childhood years among the Tongas of northern Rhodesia, their language. Sybil said, Foy could speak Chitonga quite fluently and sometimes translated for mother. Foy wrote in an undated radio transcript, probably from the late 1950s, quote, we children spent a part of our time playing with the little black children and learned to speak their language. We learned to make little clay oxen and cows and men for toys, just like the native children were so expert in doing. We even tried to like some of their favorite foods. Close quote. He then described trying unsuccessfully to learn to enjoy eating flying ants and locusts. Though he left the language when he was almost 9 years old, he still remembered enough when he moved back into the area in the late 1940s to be able to communicate with the tribesmen. A few details about the Short's early days in Sinde Mission came from Ella Clark Quinch, the young mixed-race girl who, along with her sister, Rhoda Bent, accompanied the Shorts from Forestville Mission to Sinde. Ella, who along with her sister was raised by John Sheriff and his wife, spent about 2 years as an early teen with the Shorts at Sinde and came to have a deep love for them. Many years later, her daughter, Adela Margarison, became very close to Foy and his wife, Margaret. Adela told Margaret several stories her mother told her about the Shorts. For example, quote, one Sunday at service, Granny Short was not in a good mood and took no notice of what Sybil was up to and didn't stop her playing around or making a noise. She said, Granddaddy Short stopped in the middle of his sermon, walked down, and took Sybil out and spanked her, then brought her back and set her next to Grand Short, and then went back to his preaching. Challenges for Foy's parents. Part of Will's work at Sinde Mission involved hiring and supervising African teachers. He had to farm so that his family could eat while he worked constantly on construction projects to improve the primitive facilities. When he found time, usually during the dry season, he made forays into surrounding villages to preach. He wrote F.B. Shepherd in late 1924. Quote, I am in bed again for a few days. I have been feeling very well for a while, and by not trying to do any work to amount to much, I am able to keep going. Saturday, I suppose I lifted too much. Then Sunday, took a 6-mile hike preaching at a village about 3 miles from here. Well, that finished me, and I've been in bed since. The house is coming along very fine. Only for lack of funds, I am loosing up on it a bit until we get some money to buy more material. I am letting a number of boys go. We are in about as bad circumstances this year financially as we were last year. Have a little garden, a few chickens, and are getting a little milk, very little, but some for the babies. Close quote. Ray Lawyer arrived to help the Shorts on March 6, 1925. Will wrote in his diary, I was exceedingly glad to see him. Delia, who loved conversation, was probably even happier to have someone else to talk to. Lawyer's wife, Zelma, arrived shortly afterwards. The Lawyers were friends of the Shorts at Cordell Christian College, and their arrival must have been a tremendous boost. Lawyer wrote about a trip he and Will Short took into villages in the area. Quote, we have just returned from a 150-mile journey among the natives. The weather has been extremely hot and dry. We visited a number of villages where we were told white missionaries had never been. We enjoyed the work, except that at times our feet got pretty sore. Our riding mule slipped away and ran home so that we had to walk for about 75 miles. Brother Short limped along for the last few days, but didn't say much about it. There were only a few confessions, but we had a good hearing at most of the villages. We were pleased with the way we were received. Seed was sown for future harvest. Close quote. Will Short wrote of another 200-mile trip a few months later. Quote, "Just last week, Brother Lawyer and myself returned from a 2 weeks trip among the villages. We had a profitable trip, and one that we hope will bring honor and glory to God and save many souls. Three stepped forward to show their faith in the Lord Jesus. We made over 200 miles with the boys carrying our luggage. It is a great life to be out among people who have never heard of the gospel plan of salvation and who are eager to learn anything. Out in the open with our families at the mission by themselves, we were out of communication with them for over a week, but we had a comforter, the Lord Himself, who cares for us all. We saw the tracks of all kinds of deer, hyena, zebra, and lion, and crocodile. All these kept something exciting for us to talk about as we tramped along one day after another. We had one mule for riding while the other carried a load, but the one mule gave us much rest except where we had to leave it behind on account of the tsetse fly." The Dow Merritt family arrived in August of 1926 to help the Shorts and Lawyers. The George Scott family arrived in 1927. Since there were now four families, they made plans to start a new mission to be called Kabanga, about 70 miles northeast of Sende. The original plans were for the Shorts to work with the George Scott family at Sende, while the Merritts and Lawyers worked to establish the Kabanga mission. The latter two families were building their homes while living in grass lean-tos on the new mission in late 1927, when Ray Lawyer was tragically killed in a freak accident. He stumbled and fell on a spear that he was carrying on a hunt. Relays of Africans carried him on a stretcher as quickly as possible to the rail line, where he was transferred to Livingston. However, in spite of the best efforts of Merritt, a medic during World War I, Lawyer passed away a few days after his injuries. He left a godly widow and a little band of shocked but still determined missionaries. Selma Lawyer returned to the States in 1928 and taught many years at Abilene Christian College. She was especially close to Foy's sisters, Sybil, Beth, and Margaret, when they were at Abilene. She wrote a fictionalized account of her African experiences in 1943. Sybil maintained contact with Jean, the Lawyer's daughter, who lived in Portland, Oregon in 2009. Though nothing in any published work hints of any friction among the families, Will Short's diaries reveal that there were strains. He wrote in December of 1927, "Brother Merritt came down for a talk. He said that we could not work together, but we do not see it that way. We are willing to overlook their mistakes and keep our hearts right. We pray God to help us and give us wisdom. Merritts had sorely misjudged us and already prejudged. We feel that they see things in a different light now." Close quote. Such tension could be expected among families who had to work closely together in extremely remote areas. This one evidently resolved itself after conversation between the affected parties. Kabanga Mission, 1928. Ray Lawyer's death made Will Short decide to postpone a trip to the United States to move his family to Kabanga to help Dow Merritt. He didn't want Merritt to be left holding the bag regarding Lawyer's obligations to finish the house there and pay the workers. Kabanga was an even more remote mission than Sende, 2.5 days on an ox cart from the nearest train stop. The Shorts worked there until their trip back to the United States in late 1928. Don Carlos Janes reported in January of 1928, "The Shorts are occupying the house Brother Lawyer started at Cabanga, but without floors, doors, or windows, and with unfinished roof. They keep the light burning at night and have the gun handy for intruding wild animals." Short later wrote Janes that he was snowed under here trying to get all this work done. Occasional boxes of goods sent from brethren in the United States brightened the lives of the family. Will Short wrote in his diary in January of 1928, "Boxes came from home. Children just jumped and squealed with delight. Foy's blackboard was run over with the wagon, but did not render the board unfit for use. Foy can ride a little in it now, and his tractor is quite a joy to him. Sybil was so happy she didn't know what to do. Her sleeping doll is so nice. She's afraid she will break it as she broke the other small one. She said, 'Mommy, put my dolly up. I do not want to break it.' Beth also received a sleeping doll, and both girls a little trunk of doll clothes each. Delia received some pans, dresses, etc. I received a flashlight and a few small articles, all very useful, and we are thankful for all. God is very merciful to us and gives us blessings far beyond what we are worthy of, what we ask, or even what we think." Closed quote. At Cabanga, as well as rural missions, the Shorts had to keep an eye out for dangerous animals. Sybil recalled, "I was nearly six when Mother was busy sewing and said I could make a cake. I was standing at the kitchen door beating the eggs with a fork when a movement on the top step caught my eye at the same time I heard the yard worker crying, 'Tijana, run!' I saw a large snake crawling on the veranda and dropped the bowl with a crash and ran screaming to Mother. I managed to say, 'Snake!' And she hurried to the door and saw that the African had killed the snake with his hoe." Close quote. Short reported in 1928 that he had made a 280-mile trip to preach in the villages. He walked 180 of those miles and was able to surprise his good friend George Scott at Sinde Mission, where he posted some letters. He added, "I am getting anxious to get back home, but I have a long way to go yet. There are over 100 miles, just guessing, to be traveled before I get back, and by going about among the natives' villages, it will take a good deal of time." Though always optimistic in his official reports about such expeditions, Will's diary revealed a little more of his inner feelings when he set out on them. Quote, "Finished putting things together this morning and then started at noon. Walked fast. Reached Cabanga Valley in 2.5. I had a small buck just as I was nearing camp. Much water in the flats. I hated to leave home, but this work has to be done, and I'm the only one who can get away. And I believe I am the only one able to do the village work. Delia was a bit blue about my leaving, but did not show it over much." Close quote. A letter from the elders at Harper, Kansas, to the Word and Work magazine described Will Short's weakened condition after the trip. Quote, "He was home but one day when he was obliged to go to bed with fever, which continued for 2 weeks. Then, when they decided he must go to the hospital, he was obliged to ride lying on his back in a donkey cart all night over rough roads until they could reach the motor road. Then he rode all day and another night by motor car and trains before reaching the hospital. The fever has left him lame. We hope only temporarily. He is again back at Cabanga Mission and engaged in teaching and preaching the gospel at that place, and hopes to be able to walk and preach again soon." Close quotes. Dal Merritt said that Short took a number of similar trips, and that on half these jaunts he took his 8-year-old son, Foy, with him. When he took Foy, they rode an old gray mule. When he went alone, he used the old worn-out mission bicycle. Merritt described Will Short's preparation. Besides the roll of bedding, the box of food, and 2 large canvas water bags, there was also carried a box of cooking utensils, a smaller box containing medicine and dressings, a suitcase, and a heavy rifle. He added that often 5 men were needed to carry the equipment, plus 1 interpreter. Don Carlos Janes reported in April of 1929, Sister Scott reports 138 baptisms at Sinday and outstations by Brothers Short, Scott, and Helpers in 1928. The day school at Sinday last year had an enrollment of around 100. 3,537 treatments were given the sick. There are about 60 acres under cultivation. The report gives an idea of what the 3 missionary families were accomplishing in the late 1920s. Finally, in late 1928, enough money was collected for Will Short to bring his family to the United States to rest and talk about their work among American churches. Trip to America, 1928 to 1930. Will Short wrote a detailed report of his trip from Africa to the United States in the Word and Work magazine. Zelma Lawyer accompanied the family on their trip home. After visiting Brother Sheriff in Wuyu Wuyu and Brother Hadfield in Bulawayo, the family traveled to Cape Town, where they boarded the Gloucester Castle of the Union Castle Line for the voyage to England. The ship stopped at St. Helena, the remote island in the South Atlantic where Napoleon had been exiled. Foy remembered the long stairs called Jacob's Ladder that led up to the house where Napoleon lived. The ship next stopped at Ascension Island, where the natives brought some turtles to the ship that weighed nearly 600 pounds that were destined for the table of the King of England. The travelers saw the Graf Zeppelin flying overhead before finally docking in England 24 days after leaving Cape Town. After arriving in England on October 17, 1928, and spending 4 days there, the Short family departed for America on a 17,000-ton ship, Tuscania, that encountered a strong gale in the North Atlantic. The ship shook and trembled from head to stern, then stopped in mid-ocean, unable to go further without danger of tearing itself to pieces. Will Short said, "This was another time we put ourselves in the hand of God." Foy remembered the storm. After arriving in the States, Will Short traveled around the country, giving reports to churches and working to print some songbooks in the Chitanga language. The trip was a blur of churches and travel to young Foy. After a little over a year of visits and travel, Will took his family to the West Coast to sail for Africa from the other side of the continent. He wrote in May of 1930, "All the way through the West was a profitable trip. We saw many brethren and encouraged the mission cause very much, we believe. Had fine visits at Vancouver and at Victoria. Brethren came to the boat to visit us. We did not have the time that we needed, but Africa is calling, and we must hasten on." Don Carlos Janes wrote in July, "Brother Short was in Sydney May 11th, intending to sail for Africa on the 16th. One of the great blessings that Will Short obtained during his visit to the States was a 1930 Chevrolet that he brought back to Africa on the ship. The car lasted him for many years, even after it had holes in the floorboard. He wrote in 1938, quote, I would like to say a word about our motor car and give honor where honor is due. After 8 years of faithful services, it is still going. 60,000 miles over these roads is what I think very good going. Our spring trip to Bulawayo is the only time that it has given any real trouble, and that was one connecting rod burned out because the oil pump failed. The body is very badly broken up, but we hope it will last a little longer until we can manage another. Wuyu, Wuyu. When the Shorts arrived in Rhodesia in 1930 after their trip to the States, they decided to move to a new mission started by John Sheriff east of Salisbury in the heart of Mashonaland. Jack Mazira had evangelized the area, and Sheriff decided to put a mission there. When obtaining the property, Sheriff mistakenly understood the natives to be saying Huyuyu, and that's the way the place is spelled in the Word and Work magazine. However, someone later found out that since Sheriff was hard of hearing, he misunderstood what the Africans were telling him, and that the actual name of the place was Wuyu Wuyu. Wuyu Wuyu would be home for the Will Short family until support from the States almost dried up completely during the Great Depression. The Word and Work is filled with pleas during the early 1930s for financial help for the foreign evangelist, but it usually wasn't forthcoming during the economic crisis. W.L. Brown wrote, "Brother Short is receiving only about $65 per month." At one time during the Depression, the family received only $20 a month from supporting churches. Brethren in northern Rhodesia sent the following radiogram to Don Carlos Janes. Livingston, Rhodesia, February 24th, deficit $500. Merchants refuse credit, no meal, must close if no funds, property endangered, locust, crisis. Though Will Short did little complaining, John Sheriff did it for him. He wrote after visiting the Shorts, quote, "To try and increase their income and pay off debts, he was trying to sell his rifle and had left their car in Salisbury to be sold and was visiting farms and villages on foy cycle preaching. Brethren, I know times are hard and money scarce, but I hope and pray Brother and Sister Short won't be compelled to sell that car." In spite of economic difficulties, Will Short's reports were always optimistic. Quote, "Since the first of the year, 19 have been baptized in Salisbury and 13 at the outstations, with 6 more at Salisbury School to be baptized soon. We had one baptism out here. The work in northern Rhodesia is doing nicely as reports go. Would like so much to go up there this year. We really need to get away with the children for a change. 2 years here now, and they are feeling it. But we will have to await the Lord's directions in the matter. Our children are doing very well in their correspondence school work. Foy is trying for a scholarship the last of this year if he can. Brother Sheriff said he would throw his hat over Table Mountain if he passed. But whether he passes or not is something for him to work for out here by himself as he is." Close quote. Short mentioned Foy's education. He and his sister studied a government correspondence course. However, such instruction terminated at the end of the 7th grade, at which time those in remote areas were expected to send their children to boarding school in Salisbury. Foy and Sybil both remember the problems their parents had with aggressive baboons at Wuyu Wuyu. There were granite escarpments behind their home that were full of them. They were often in the garden, and the Africans often had to chase them away. The family also had dogs, including a Great Dane called Budge, that was one of the family favorites. Sybil recalled, quote, "One day, A worker came running to tell Daddy that baboons were in the garden and he couldn't chase them out. Daddy shut the dogs in the workshop, fastening both the top and bottom halves of the Dutch door. Then he went to the garden, intending to shoot into the air to scare the baboons away. But a large male decided to argue, and Daddy shot but only wounded the baboon, and it went up into a nearby hill. Daddy followed cautiously, knowing how dangerous a wounded baboon can be. When he saw the baboon, it was crouching under a bush about to spring. The baboon sprang as he raised his gun and fired, and at the same instant something whooshed past him, knocking him to one side as Budge hurled himself at the baboon. The baboon was already hurtling forward when the bullet struck him, and he and Budge met in midair, and the baboon's great teeth ripped Budge's jugular vein. One of the workers had left the top of the Dutch door open, and Budge had jumped over the bottom half of the door to race after his master. Daddy was sure it would have been his own jugular vein if it had not been for Budge. There was nothing he could do for the dog. Foy dug a grave, and we gave Budge a tearful funeral. Then Foy cut and sanded a piece of wood and burned on it the inscription, "Here lies Budge, killed by a baboon." Donkeys. There were always challenges on the farm with donkeys. Once, when Phil was having trouble with them, Delia told him, "You know, Daddy, there may be just one donkey too many out there." Donkeys also provided amusement for the children. Foy made a donkey cart that Sybil recalled when writing a poem for Margaret and him on their 50th wedding anniversary. The poem? "He built a cart when he was 10, with 2 old wheels and boarded sides. He hitched the donkeys, offered rides, and his 3 sisters clambered in." On a later occasion, Foy got into some trouble when trying to help his sisters and some visiting children learn to ride donkeys. His sister Sybil wrote in her personal memoirs, quote, "One weekend, the Vandermeers were visiting, and we children wanted to ride donkeys. Foy had the largest donkey and led the group. Ella and I were next, each on a donkey, followed by Beth on a smaller donkey. We rode in single file down the sloping driveway, then turned and came back up the drive. Further up the hill, the main herd of donkeys was grazing, and one of them brayed. When Foy's donkey heard that, he decided to buck Foy off and join the other donkeys. Our donkeys had been going very sedately, and all was well until they saw and heard Foy's donkey. Then they began to run, spilling girls in all directions. As Daddy gathered us up to assess the damage, girls were crying. Mother checked us over, sympathizing with the hurts, and Ella's mother was almost hysterical, crying, 'I knew I shouldn't have let her ride.' Ella's hand was only bruised, and Beth revived with a small knot on her head. But we never forgot that donkey ride." Close quote. Foy wrote the following as an adult after colliding with a donkey on the road. Quote, "Donkeys, they are in great demand in the communal tribal areas. They are used for plowing, for general transport, and for taking the family shopping or to church services. It is quite a sight to see a 5-donkey team galloping down the road with the family lurching behind in a 2-wheel cart. Donkeys seem to survive drought even better than goats, but they don't have the traffic sense that goats have on the highways. Throughout the communal areas, animals feed alongside of the highways and roam across them at will. You can usually count on goats getting off the road when cars approach, but not donkeys. They either stand right where they are in the middle of the road or else amble unconcerned across or up the middle hence are the cause of many accidents. Close quote. Family leisure time and yearly gatherings. Sybil recalled quieter times in the evenings at her home in Wooyoo. When we were sick, Daddy would always read to us. He sat in the door where it was light and read First Steps for Little Feet and other children's books. We always had Bible reading every morning and every night. Around 1933, the Shorts came across an old Edison cabinet-type record player that had 11 records with one song or piece of music per side. There was some classical music, humorous songs, and cowboy songs. They especially enjoyed the hymns including Rock of Ages, The Old Rugged Cross, and Under His Wings. One of the crazy songs was titled Stop Your Tickling, Jock. Sybil said, if anyone was in a bad mood, someone put that record on and we would all start laughing. The Edison had a diamond point needle that did not wear out. The small band of missionaries was very close, especially the first families in the region, the Shorts, Merritts, Reeses, Sheriffs, Lawyers, and Scotts. A brief summary of the background of these families and others would be placed in an appendix at the end of this book. Once a year, they had a reunion, often around holiday season. It became a tradition to have the reunion alternating years in northern Rhodesia and the next year in southern Rhodesia. Foy's sister recalled observing the adults from a child's perspective. Quote, when Mother told us to go to bed, Foy and I got ready for bed, then crept into the hallway to sit on the floor by the door to the living room so that we could hear the grown-ups talking. I particularly remember how I enjoyed hearing them talk about Bible subjects and discuss pros and cons on some things. Mother liked to play devil's advocate, and Margaret Reese helped her, which made for some lively discussions. Sometimes they argued, but I never got the feeling anyone was angry, and sometimes they went into peals of laughter. I don't know how long Foy and I sat there, but I never forgot the warm feeling that came out of that room. Close quote. Worship services always make an impression on young children. Sybil has pictures in her mind of meeting many times with Africans for services under big shade trees. She recalled the church at Wooyoo in the 1930s. Quote, until the church building was finished, or if we were meeting in a village, we met under a shade tree and the white people were given chairs or stools to sit on. The native women sat on their own grass mats and most men carried their own little stools. At the mission, Sunday worship began as soon after 11 as the people arrived, and sometimes we got home after 2 or 3 o'clock. Native mothers nursed infants and toddlers and brought food for the older children. The main African preacher was Jack Mazira. His village was about 3 miles from the mission, and his family, including his 100-year-old mother, walked to and from meeting every Sunday. We girls liked for him to speak because he didn't talk too long. The other speaker was Tom Mugazda. He didn't know when to stop, and we could see Sunday dinner being at 3 o'clock or later. I'm not speaking for Foy, who was older and by then could understand and speak the language. Close quote. Boarding school. When Foy and his sisters finished the 7th grade correspondence courses, Will and Delia followed local tradition and sent them to boarding school in Salisbury. Foy's work for the test at the end of his correspondence courses paid off as he won a scholarship to cover the boarding and school fees at the Prince Edward School. His name is still on a large board in the school auditorium, listing the names of all scholarship winners in the history of the school. Foy studied at the Prince Edward School for 5 years and earned the equivalent of an Associate of Arts degree. When he attended Abilene Christian College later, he would only need to study 2 years to obtain his bachelor's degree. Foy played on the school's rugby team. His school magazine, An impressive publication described his rugby skills in 1938. Quote, H.F. Short, a determined front rank man who was substituted only because he did not fit the size of the rank. One of the most fearless tacklers in the team and a great opportunist in the loose. Close quote. Foy's headmaster, that's principal, wrote a glowing recommendation for Foy upon his graduation. After listing a number of awards that Foy won while at the school, he wrote, quote, he is of strong physique and has played for our first rugby 15. He took part in practically all school games, cricket, tennis, boxing, and swimming. He gained the certificates and gold medallion of the Royal Life Saving Society. In the cadets, he was a good shot. His other interests include debating society, book binding, and printing. He has a sterling character for honesty, right behavior, and high principles. In personality, he is quiet, but frank and pleasing. He is well-liked here and has promise of strength of character. I am certain he will do well, for he is conscientious, reliable, and competent. Close quote. Sybil remembered that very autocratic teachers ruled the roost at the boarding schools. We had nicknames for all of them. She also recalled that bells regulated everything. She said, we got up by bells, ate by bells, and did our homework by bells. The school session began in January, and the older children were only able to come home from Salisbury for the midterm at the end of the term, 3 weeks twice a year, and the 6 weeks Christmas break. One problem that the Shorts had to face was the fact that there was no known group of Christians in Salisbury at the time that worshipped God in English and believed exactly like they did. However, Will visited a small congregation of 12 to 15 people known to have connections with the Brethren. After talking at length with the members, he felt them to be scriptural in most of their work and teaching and decided that his children could attend there when unable to return home. Will wrote in 1960 about this period in their lives. Quote, when our children were small and until they had to go away to boarding school, wife and I tried to teach Bible principles so they could stand for the Lord when they had to leave us. Then the time came when they had to go, first to boarding school, and then out to live their own lives. We have seen very little of our children since then, but today, September 11th, we heard our oldest son preach the gospel here at Queen's Park East, and he rose to the heights of power in extolling our Savior and his church. Macheke. As the Depression deepened and support from American congregations dried up, Will Short decided that it would be impossible to continue living at Wuyu Wuyu Mission and feed his family at the same time. However, he was able to obtain a farm 25 miles away at Macheke, which he called Faro. He worked to evangelize his neighbors in the new area while maintaining contact with African brethren at Wuyu Wuyu. Though he must have been disappointed at having to dedicate more time to farming, Will remained upbeat in his report to Word and Work. Quote, we have now moved off the reserve. We could not meet the government requirements to hold the mission lease, so it was canceled. But the government gave us a farm about 25 miles from the mission, which we can purchase. It contains about 3,000 acres at $1 an acre. Payments to be spread over 20 years with no interest. We are moving our buildings and material to this place. Thus, we will be buying our place instead of leasing always. The church building, however, is not to be moved. It remains where it is to be used by the congregation there. A large congregation meets every week, and native leaders are able to go ahead with the meetings. We are to keep this as a preaching center, and I will go in and help them as often as possible. In the meantime, I will help teach at other places. New opportunities are opening up with our move, and we hope to use them as often as possible. We will also work with the white people of the farms. About 25 were present for our first meeting of white people. A very fine meeting was held at the mission during Christmas holidays. 2 and 3 native teachers speaking at each service. 591 people were present at our service on Christmas Day. Close quote. Foy's father sent fewer reports to Word and Work after moving to Macheke, but checked in occasionally, especially to report on his efforts to teach European farmers in the area. Sybil pointed out that her father picked the smallest farm and refused to cultivate tobacco because he wouldn't raise anything he didn't believe people should use. He raised corn, peanuts, and grains. After Foy's baptism, when he was 10 years old, he began to help his father with preaching and work on the farm at Macheke. He learned the Shona language from his boyhood friends well enough to translate for his father on preaching expeditions, primarily during school holidays. Of the 3 African languages he learned, Chitanga, Shona, and Isindebele, he probably felt more comfortable with Shona, at least during the time he spoke it extensively. Foy's daughter, Kay, recalled that when traveling through London in about 2005, Foy heard some people sitting in front of him speaking Shona. He went up and introduced himself to them in the Shona language. They were very surprised, but happy to see this pleasant elderly man of European ancestry speaking to them in their native tongue. Margaret laughed and said that after talking for a while with Foy and Shona, the young Zimbabweans told her that Foy could speak the language better than they could. Oxen. Paddy Kendallball described Foy as very strong physically, and much of his strength must have been developed through the hard farm chores as a teenager. Foy said, "My job was to drive the oxen and draft work with wagon or plow." He learned to drive teams of up to 18 oxen to haul up to 5 tons of corn and produce for local farmers to the railroad station. It wasn't an easy task. He said, "On years when there had been a lot of rain on the roads, they would become stuck." The oxen were also used for plowing with a 3-disc plow to plow 3 furrows at a time. Foy said, quote, "I learned a lot about people by dealing with oxen. There were oxen that were quite willing to work and would work hard. There were others that if you so much as touched them with a whip, they wouldn't pull. They'd stop. There were some who would just lie down when they felt the yoke on their neck. I learned that you had to be careful not to scold people." Close quote. He told of one particular ox that gave him problems until one of his companions remembered an old African trick. Quote, "There was one ox that I was trying to train, but every time you put a yoke on his neck, he would lie down. I tried everything I knew. One thing they often did was twist their tails, and that would make them get up, but it didn't with this one. They'd get a bucket of water and put their nose in it. Sometimes that would make them get up, but this one just shook his head and threw it off. We were at our wit's end when one of the Africans remembered that we had plowed up a snake a little before. We got that snake, and he held that next to the ox's nose, and he jumped up. From then on, all we had to do was drag that snake along the animal's nose, and he would keep going and pull for all he was worth." Close quote. Foy's sister Sybil recalled Foy and his oxen as they hauled mealies, that is, corn. Quote, "When Foy hauled mealies for the farmers, he had 16 or 18 oxen yoked to the big wagon and was gone several days at a time with his African assistants. When it was time for him to be coming down the road on the way to the railroad at Macheke, we girls listened for his whip cracking and his voice in the distance shouting to the oxen. Then we ran to meet him and rode on the wagon back to the house. On one of his trips, his wagon with its load of mealies got stuck in a river, and the oxen couldn't pull the heavy load out. It looked like rain was coming, and they needed to get out of the river and keep the mealies dry. Foy and his helpers carried the 200-pound bags of mealies on their shoulders or backs from the wagon to the bank. Then the oxen pulled the wagon out, and they reloaded the mealies. It was a long, hard job, but they got it done, and a tarp over the bags before the rain came. Close quote. Foy's work with oxen went so well that after finishing school in December of 1938, he began a transport business using an ox wagon to haul farm produce from neighboring farms to the train siding in Macheke, and then bring back supplies from Macheke to the farms. In that way, he raised money to help pay his way back to the States for college. When Foy returned to the States in 1940 to attend college, he visited a number of congregations. Don Carlos James reported, "Foy Short, 19, who returned from Africa alone, made some instructive addresses in Louisville as he passed to the West. He also demonstrated the giant whips with which as many as 16 oxen are driven at once." Foy said in 2008, "I still have that whip." Snakes and other critters. Still other critters challenged Foy and his family as they tried to eke out a living from the hard land. Quote, "Our houses over there were thatched with long grass that would grow 8 to 10 feet tall. They'd cut that and use it to thatch the roof. There was one house that had old grass on it that needed to be replaced. I was up there on the roof stripping that old grass off. I started looking, and there was a boomslang, a tree snake, and quite poisonous, coiled up under that grass. When I saw that, I just started sliding down the roof to get off of it. I flew off and jumped away." Close quote. Eldred Eccles said that Foy's father, Will, had a cool hand with snakes. He told of an occasion when Will was preaching in the living room of a house in Namuyanga when a yellow cape cobra slithered from the kitchen and made his way across the center of the room. According to Eccles, without interrupting his sermon, Will moved quietly over to the snake and put his foot across his neck. Then, taking the snake's tail in his hand, with its head still pinned to the floor, he scooted it across the screen door. He threw open the screen door and took his foot off its neck at the same moment, and then cracked the whip with the snake, popping its head off. He then went on with his lesson, quite unperturbed by the interruption. Foy mentioned locust. Quote, "Every so often there would be a large swarm of locusts that would come along, and it would take a couple of days for the swarm to get past. Usually it didn't do any damage as long as they were flying, but when they settled in the evening, they would be as much as 6 inches deep. The next morning when they flew off, there wouldn't be a green leaf anywhere. The grass was all gone. There was no feed for the cattle." Fortunately, the Shorts had to deal with a locust invasion only once at Macheke. Others suffered more. And then there were the occasional dealings with lions. Sybil wrote in her memoirs, quote, "One evening, Francois de Wet came to our house telling us that a lion had taken a calf from his cattle kraal the night before. He lay in wait for it the next evening and shot it, but only wounded it, and the lion had gone into the bush, and he came to get Daddy and Foy. They got two farmer neighbors and a tracker to go with them to look for the lion. When the men came back, they were laughing because they found the lion lying in a shade tree, obviously dying. They had a discussion about who would shoot. Francois had wounded it, so they said he should kill it. But he said Mr. Short was the oldest, so he should have the honor of the kill. They decided to line up, and all five of them shoot at the same time." Older teen. Foy became adept as a mechanic while a teenager. He scrounged parts from an old four-cylinder Ford engine and used his father's forge and anvil to build a workable steam engine to turn a crank for a corn milling machine. His science teacher visited the farm, and Will showed him what his son had made. His teacher was highly impressed. In his later life, according to Ellen, he rebuilt his Volkswagen's engine 2 times, even though the local Volkswagen mechanic told him that it would not be possible for that job to be done by anyone except someone with specialized training. After Foy did that supposedly impossible task, the mechanic tried to hire him for the local Volkswagen dealership in Guelo. After the corn hauling season ended 1 year, Foy and a friend from a neighboring farm fixed up the ox wagon, making it look like an old Conestoga wagon, and took his family and the neighboring family on a camping expedition to an area about 15 miles away from their home. Sybil said, "The boys slept under the tree on camp cots, the girls slept in the covered wagons, and the boys slept underneath it. We had the time of our lives for about 5 days." When Foy finished boarding school in Salisbury with the equivalent of a 2-year college degree, he hoped to obtain a job as a game ranger. Meanwhile, he worked on the farm for 2 years. The more he worked, however, the more he realized that he needed to further his education in the United States, and so he began to make plans to leave Rhodesia temporarily. Though his father wanted him to attend Harding College, Foy made no commitment and simply decided to check out the possibilities when arriving in the States. Will Short wrote in early 1940, "Things of this earth are passing away as 1939 has passed. May we be strengthened to strive for things immortal. We are hoping the older children, at least, will be able to get home for a little while to attend some Bible school. They have finished their schooling here, and we want them to have a little time in Bible school before going into the real mission work, although they are helping a great deal now." Sybil mentioned plans for both Foy and her to go to the States when writing an informative report for her father that appeared in the August 1940 issue of Word and Work magazine. Before referring to the upcoming trip to the States, she talked about other interesting aspects of the work. Quote, "I have been appointed to write this letter this month and hope I will be able to make it interesting. Brother Brown and family are still with us, and we are enjoying their stay very much. On Sunday mornings, Sister Brown takes a Bible class with the native women, and Foy, my brother, has one with the men, while I take the white children. Then we have the regular morning meeting. 3 white people and a large number of natives have given themselves to the Lord during the last 2 months. Last Sunday was during a free weekend for school children, and there were 32 of us at a neighbor's home for the day.